Hello, hello. Greetings and salutations, my friend.
Love it.
Hi, guys. It's Katrina and Becca.
Hello.
Lexi is not joining us tonight because Lexi's doing the work of two people this week. She's covering her boss's patients, I think. So she is unable to join us today, but we could not let that stop us from discussing this because, oh my God. So, and then there, we found out some additional information and we've been down YouTube rabbit holes and we've got so much good, quote unquote, theology stuff for you.
Oh my God. So much more than we thought there was going to be today, but
way more. Here we are. Way more. So we're talking Zeke and Sister Wife, and this is this episode. So, like, we didn't have the Muslim couple. I don't
know. And I was wondering about them because I was like, where did they go? They haven't been in like two episodes. And then I was glad to see them in the preview for the next one. I was like, did they just like cut them and no one told us?
We don't know. The pacing is off with the show right now. I don't know what's going on.
It's so weird. I'm like, why did they just drop them for two episodes? And they're like, oh, wait, they're here.
Meantime, they spend two episodes with this completely fabricated producer paid, you know, woman Grace dating on that other couple, right? The doctor axe throwing couple. That's like they spent two episodes on this completely fake thing and then they're like, okay, bye. And then the other producer thing with the other couple, but which I mean, their scene was all fake today again, but we have a lot to talk about with them regardless because of whatever. Anyway, so we're talking about Seeking Sister Wife. Now, Lexi's usually our scribe. She's our note taker on the show. Neither Becca or I did that, but we're going to roll with it. So sorry, we're going to try our best.
May not be as linear as it usually is.
Yeah, exactly. But okay, so let's get the Davises out of the way because there really wasn't much to talk about with them, right? Like, let's just talk about the Davises, right?
Sure. So okay, so they claim she moved out and then moved back in, which okay. We didn't see any of that. But then also, like, he's freaking out because she still has the apartment lease. So he's like, well, she could leave at any time. And I'm like, well, she could have anyway.
They're saying she's changing her mind. Right. Oh, wait. I just fixed my microphone. So my sound is going to change. My hetero life mate, husband, producer is going to be like, what was wrong? Why were you so off mic your first half year? Anyway.
Well, you sound much better now, so that's okay.
Oh, well, see there. You could at least hear me before. I just want to be completely transparent. I took a sick day today. I've got some MS muscle stuff going on, and some muscle relaxers are on board. So there's a way
to treat
it. Well,
that'll make the conversation more interesting. It's fine.
So I'm not 100% with it.
Okay.
You know, anyway. Yeah, so Danielle, they're saying like, oh, well, let's have a conversation. Oh, I was just scared because of moving too fast, but I'll move right back in.
Yeah, but then also she's like, well, you can date somebody basically, but like if it's moving too fast, I'm going to say so.
Yeah, so again, why did she move out? Like, didn't we mention this last time that like that thing about her being scared about them dating other people too soon, like that's a conversation you have in relationships. Given their relationship and it's been going on for 2 years or more before they got married or whatever, but like they would have had, like they can have hard conversations, clearly. Would have been a hard conversation. It's not I'm going to move out and take my plants and my, you know, clamor away.
Yeah, the plants are gone.
in the dead of night. Well, I guess it wasn't the dead of night. It was middle of the day and she made a ruckus and he heard her. It's not like I'm going to go secretly get a lease on an apartment and move out and not tell anybody. Like those are two completely, like they're not proportional to each other. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So I don't buy any of this.
Confused about all of it. Like, I don't know. And then they just keep saying like, oh, she moved out and then she moved back in. And I'm like, did she move all her stuff back? Like, what? How would this even?
Yeah, like none of this makes sense. It all screams made up, but like not made up. Like, there's clearly an issue. You know, her body language isn't lying. She's not.
Right.
I think she's being very honest about the way she feels in this relationship right now. But like, what's the storyline that the producers are going after here with this move out, move not back in, or you might move out at any second because you have this apartment there? Like, that's stupid.
Well, and what's especially weird about the whole thing is that, like, they tried to push her and be like, so what's the issue? Like, we told you we were going to start dating, like, right, at some point. And it's, we've been together for 2 years. Like, what's the deal? And she doesn't really say anything. She's just like, oh, well, it's complicated. Like, that kind of thing. And you're like, yeah, okay, so what are you not saying?
What's happening? What's not going? Yeah, everything about this didn't make any sense. Didn't advance the storyline. Didn't advance the understanding of the storyline.
No.
So whatever is a wash for me. I guess we'll have to wait till next week.
See what something else actually happens.
See something else happen with them. But like I said, let's get them out of the way. Right. Yeah. What other, okay, what, who do we go? Garrick?
Yeah, oh, no, do you want to do that now? Or do you want to do Shane and
Shane and Doctor and Axe Thrower.
Yes, Doctor and Axe Throwers.
Yes. Yes, let's address them, addressing the girl's not going to show up for the fake date because TLC didn't pay her to actually show up.
Oh, no, that was the Ryans. But we were going to wait to talk about
that. I'm getting confused. Which producer? Because the producers paid somebody in both these circumstances. So I keep getting.
Right. That's why. Yeah. So we'll skip the Ryans for now because there's a whole lot of other
talk about. Let's do, the Ryans come later. Let's do the Sherwoods.
Sherwoods. Thank you. Yes. So she goes on a date with a new woman who they met through social media, I guess.
They didn't get any more specific than that. So,
yeah. So I'm like, did she slide into her DMs? I don't know. I'm just very curious. But
I
think
somebody did some sliding there. I don't know which way, there was some sliding involved. Was it an electric slide? Was it a boogaloo slide? I don't know what it was. I don't know what kind of slide it was.
Slide. Oh my gosh. So what was interesting about this is, right, so I'm juxtaposing in my head like the date they had shown with Grace when we first started the show, and they were like bowling.
Vegan, dairy-free, soy-free salad.
Well, yeah, but before that, like when they showed her and Grace going on a date, and I do that in quotes, they went bowling. Right? Where they went bowling. So they were like doing an activity. I don't know if it's just because she's like more pregnant now, but they literally just had them sit on a park bench.
Right?
Like, what date is this?
What kind of date is that? Like, there wasn't even snacks involved. There like, I ain't showing involved. Up to a park bench with there aren't even snacks involved.
There was nothing. It was just them sitting on a bench. But what I also thought was funny is they both were wearing, like, flowing, like, sundresses. So they looked like twins.
Like, just sitting there. What was happening there?
I don't know. That whole thing was so weird.
So they were allegedly met on social media. This girl, Sarah, was apparently she has been in sort of non-traditional relationships. She said she's dated couples before. She didn't really get more specific than that. Other, you know, like, was she dating one of them, both of them, whatever, right. Da, da, da. Like, she didn't specify anything further, but that she was open to this stuff, that she did date men more than women. But, you know, she's open to a lot of things. So, okay. Seems a lot more legit than Grace, the makeup artist from the wedding.
But why?
Don't know. But why?
So they sit on a park bench and they seem to have a decent conversation. And like, and the psychiatrist brings up like, would you want to meet my husband? And she's all like, yeah, of course. Which I thought was interesting that she felt the need to bring that up immediately after what happened with Grace.
Well, you know, they had to, as a plot point, emphasize the difference between this girl wanting to meet Shane right away and Grace not wanting to meet Shane right away, even though Grace didn't care because Grace was just a paid PA paid to be there and doesn't actually give a shit about Shane. But I think that's why they said that, was to emphasize, oh, look, you're so much better than, you know, this is right. better for us because look, that was a red flag that she didn't want to meet Shane because he's, you know, it's you're marrying the family, not, you know, and I think,
yeah,
I think that it might go to some of that, the bias and stuff that we're seeing because she's the bisexual one. She's looking for a female wife for right. her that would be platonic with him. And I think that this plays into that because this is just a different way of approaching the past, the other dating, the triad, as it were. It's not a true triad, as it, you know, or,
right.
But addressing all that, but like, let's emphasize that it's different for her because she's a lesbian. Somehow that makes the relationship difference.
Yeah. I don't know. Like the way they're dealing with the bisexuality stuff is fascinating and a little disturbing.
Yeah.
like they just, I think they're making it more different than it needs to be.
Right. Like, that's my point. They're like doing it for emphasis.
Yeah. And I'm just like, yo, this is literally the same thing that's happening with the other couples. It's just like the woman looking for the wife instead of the man. But right. because that's not the standard, like traditional, I don't know. Is there traditional, I guess?
Traditional
polygamy. Traditional, in quotes.
Well, yeah. I mean, that would be the patriarchal polygamy.
Right. Where it's like one dude with a bunch of wives or
right.
polygyny. Right. So,
right.
So that's what people are like used to when they think of polygamy. They don't necessarily think of, you know, someone who's bisexual, who's
right.
bringing in another wife.
Yeah. See, I think though, that what's interesting about that is because that is more of like the modern take on polyamory these days, right? There's like Gen Z, they're a lot more open about these sort of non-traditional, ethical non-monogamous relationships right. and how different relationships are. And they're a lot more open about these things. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are in these various relationships where mm-hmm. they're married to each other, but like one of them can go out and have a lover or a girlfriend / boyfriend or whatever, you know? And they're all genders, you know, which right. is maybe that's just my particular circle of friends. It just happens to be all genders involved, bisexuality, pansexuality. There's just like a lot of that. So none of the gender stuff really, you know, in the parts under the hood, none of that really matters. It's about other things, you know, for the ones that I know. In any case, so I think there's that. Which is, I think people do it for a lot of different reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with the traditional reasons these traditional polygamists practice polygamy. I think the reasons and the background behind somebody like the Sherwoods versus somebody like the serial killer number two guy that comes from the cult guys, they which we're going to talk about in a minute. There's a huge difference in, like, I think the reasons why, you know, they do this. And so the relationships are going to look a lot different. So, I mean, I do think it's interesting that they point out that the relationship with Shane is going to be platonic, you know?
Right. It's the whole point, like, and that's just so weird to me that they felt the need to say that. Cause mm-hmm. I'm just like, okay, well, like, no one ever questioned that, like, say, like, if we're talking about, you know, Nick and his wives, like,
right.
no one's like, oh, like, no one else is having sex. It's just Nick and the wives, right?
Right,
like,
none of the wives are having sex with each other.
Right.
Or and maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe they are. I mean,
they claimed they weren't, and they, even though they're married to each other, right? Because Nick's right. not married.
Right.
But, like, no one ever questions that. But, like, right. for some reason, you throw someone bisexual in the mix and they're like, oh, we have to, like, be clear about this.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. I don't know if we needed to, but.
Yeah. I mean, and I agree with that largely. I mean, obviously, I just said that. But then in thinking about it in some ways, like, the showing it from this, like, this is, like, sort of the modern polyamory. If you were to approach it from that point of view, which is I think how it should be viewed, it's more of that situation than a seeking sister wife situation, but whatever, you know, I think if you're showing that side of it, the modern side of polyamory, maybe specifying that is important because it could be a situation where they're all together, or, you know,
right,
what are the rules, what are the expectations?
Well, I think now that I'm thinking through it, like, because the title of the show is Seeking Sister Wife.
Right.
Like the idea of sister wives is like y'all are wives together for a dude,
yeah,
usually.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, I don't think they fit the definition of like seeking sister wife in
absolutely
the same way.
Not. Right.
So A, like there's that. And so like, why are they on the show in the first place?
Right.
They're interesting, 100%. But not really following.
Well, that's TLC trying to be like, oh, look at us being so different and hip and progressive, yeah, and woke by having this bisexual couple and trying to fit it into the shoehorn it into the seeking, yeah, sister wife paradigm versus.
Because if she's looking for a wife, that's not a sister wife, right? Like that's not a sister wife. That's a wife.
Right.
Like that's just a wife, period.
That's just a wife. You have a husband and a wife. Like that's
right,
just...
right. Like that's not a sister wife. So like,
right.
I don't know, like the whole thing. And like, not that I don't love representation in the LGBTQ community. Like, I think right, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But especially because the last time they showed bisexuality on the show, it was terrible because like first the, and it's not TLC's fault, but like the husband and the couple, like when the woman they were dating said she was bisexual, was like, so you think you're bisexual? And she's like, I am bisexual.
And then
right. And then he's like, well, I didn't want a wife to like have sex with my wife. And I was like, that's how bisexuality
works. That's not how it works, you dumb fuck. Like,
so like, I think they're trying to redeem themselves a little bit, but like, I think it's like overcorrected in the other direction where it's like, you don't even fit the paradigm for why the show exists.
Right.
So like, I'm like, you should be on like one of the, like, I don't know if it fits for from couple to throuple because you've been watching it, but like, it sounds more like it would fit more there.
Yes.
Than like, although, seeking sister wife.
The people on Couple to Thruple, so they put them in this like, they took them to a island somewhere, I think, or no, I think they're in Panama. So yeah, and I, you know, off the coast of Panama, I don't know, somewhere, and it, where it looked super hot and miserable and gross, to be honest.
Why do they film in these like insanely humid, hot places?
I was like, I can't.
I'm saying that because where they filmed for me was extremely hot and humid. So.
Yeah, it's just gross.
It was really gross.
But they're also like, it was a lot more wild and like, you know, so this is more serious and we're courting someone to be a wife versus there. It was like, maybe we want to add a third to our relationship. But effectively what they're doing is kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So from like a paradigm point of view, it would fit better on Couple to Thruple. However, personality wise, they would not at all. Like,
right,
they don't seem like the kind of people that would, they're going to these dance parties, these parties
get wild in the wilderness
on the beach wearing barely anything. Their bathing suits are, you know, it's all very, there's very lot of skin. Let's
this
just say
show sounds ridiculous. I just want to say
it was a fun break from other things I was watching. Let me just say that. I recommend it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll have to give it a shot because it sounds fascinating because obviously no other shows like that exist right now. So.
Right. Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, there's definitely a lot of sexy things happening, but then there's couples that they're all sleeping in the same bed together, but they're allegedly not even kissing. They haven't even kissed each other yet because they're not sure about each other.
Interesting.
So I don't know, but there's also a lot of, I'm just going to say, it's a lot of fucking. So, I mean,
I would, if they're like scantily clad on the beach.
Well, and
I'm
there's
assuming
a gay couple that are both like bisexual, or like for one half of the couple, the guy is like, this is my first gay relationship and I'm in love, you know, like it always been with women previously. So like when they get to pick a person, match up with a person or whatever to try out for the weekend or whatever it is that they're doing, like, it's always like, is it going to be a woman? Is it going to be a man? And actually all of the couples are like that because all of the couples are, you know, apparently if you're bisexual, you're just going to sleep with everybody under the sun. So
see, and that's like the worst because that is like that's like one of the biggest stereotypes. And that's mm-hmm. why it got me so angry, like from mm-hmm. the previous representation right. of bisexuality on the show. And he's like, well, I don't want her sleeping with my wife. And I'm like, oh yes, because you are attracted to every single woman out there. So right. she will be attracted to every single woman and man out there. Right. right. That's how it works. No, that's not how it works.
Right. right. Exactly. And that's my point is on this show, they don't make those assumptions.
You know? Right.
There's none of that. That's you know, obviously these people are much more open and curious about things. And if they're willing to go on a show going, well, we're contemplating adding a third person to our right. relationship, you know, but yeah, I recommend it. It's fun. It's a fun watch. So,
yeah, it's just interesting. Cause like, so there was a spinoff show called Seeking Brother Husband.
Right.
That lasted very short amounts of time.
I can't imagine why. Those people were horrifically boring. They were awful. There was nothing about them that I found interesting, and her wigs were awful.
So, like, I have a question about that, too, because, like, what about the fact that it wasn't fitting into the traditional image of polygamy? Did it make it not work?
No,
like,
I think it was a victim of its time, because that's an old show. I mean, that show is probably at least 10 years old, if not more.
Seeking Brother Husband?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it came out in 2023.
No.
There was one season, and it was only 6 episodes.
I'm pretty sure I saw it well before 2023. Yeah. It might have just gotten reposted or something, but I'm if it's the one that I'm thinking of, it came out a long time ago. And I think it was a victim of its time. I think it would do far better now if they did it the same concept, but with a different set of core people, because those people were really boring.
I think you're thinking of a different one. I just looked it up. It was 2023.
No. No.
Yeah. That's what it's saying. I don't know. I Googled it.
When's the other? No, I can't be right. That can't be right. Because I saw it before that. Maybe that's just when they put it up.
Maybe. Because my understanding of it was like a spinoff off of Seeking Sister Wife.
Oh, no, that one. Oh, I'm thinking of a completely different show.
Oh, well, then there you go.
That's what it is. I'm thinking of a completely different show. You know what? No, I never did watch Seeking Brother Husband. Then I watched a different one from a billion years ago.
Yeah, I find Seeking Brother Husband interesting because as I was watching it, like it just didn't seem to work in the same way. And I was trying to figure out why. And I think a lot of it is just like they don't know what to do with these couples that don't fit into like the traditional like one dude bunch of wives.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to watch. Like it's worth a watch. It's only okay. I think 6 episodes, but it didn't gel at all. And I doubt they're going to do another season.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm going to have to find the other one that I was talking about.
Yeah. Now I want to watch that.
Yeah. No, I'm going to find it. Cause I think it's on Discovery or Max or whatever. I'll find it and send it to you since I'm all just curled up on my heating pad. My husband's at work. Nothing else going on. My kid's on spring break camp. So
that works.
Yeah. So I'm all alone. So I can do this anyway.
Watch all the things.
So let's get back to the Sherwoods.
Yes. Sorry. Anyway. So she has this cool conversation and then she has this weird conversation with her husband, Shane, like in a backyard somewhere.
Uh-huh. Cause they just stand around in the backyard.
Like super weird locale, but anyway, and I'm not even sure it's their backyard because then they like walk to like this big gate at the end. And I was like, that does not look like a gate that would be in someone's backyard. Like, it looks like, I don't know, like a garden complex or I don't know. It was so weird. But anyway, I'm always curious where they're filming stuff because like, I just remember when they were filming my show, like it would take like 10 years to like reset up in a different location. And I'm just always curious about that, but anyway. And she talks about how like she had this great date and they actually hit it off and like Sarah wants to meet him and he's all like yay because Grace didn't want to do that before, and that's pretty much it. Like there's no like huge earth-shattering right. anything
there. There's nothing. It's just filler.
he got weirded out when she was like, I kissed her.
Yeah.
And he's like, what?
What? Like, oh so, my God.
That was whereas, weird.
Whereas the last conversation he had with her about Grace was all, why didn't you kiss her? Are you not right. feeling all the things and the flutteries and whatever nonsense they were making up?
Yeah. And then this time, like, she kisses her and he's like, oh, no, why are you kissing her? And I'm like, well, oh, you no. can have it both ways. Do you want her to hit it off with someone or not? Like, it seems like he doesn't really know what he wants. So
no, no, certainly, certainly he does not. Okay. So that's the Sherwoods. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with the other guys.
Hey, fraudcasters. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be such a challenge. I know I've always had problems with it, whether it was the fit or the quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims, the maker of my perfect t-shirt bra. Now I have the perfect t-shirt to go with that bra. From either crop silhouettes to long sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. My cotton jersey t-shirt is now a wardrobe staple for me. I reach for it almost every day, and the fit is so perfect because it snatches me right in at the waist. I've washed it a million times, and it's held its shape really well. It fits like a dream. I absolutely love it. And honestly, you guys, I thought, like, okay, this shirt is going to be too small for me, and it's not going to fit right, and all the bulges are going to show. But it doesn't at all. I put it on and it magically stretches to fit me perfectly, and it holds all those bulges in. Every little but last bulge that I have is all held in, and it looks fantastic. I absolutely love it, and it is super, super comfortable, and it is one of my new favorite t-shirts. You can shop the Skims t-shirt collection at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small up to 4X. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu.
Now, where were we? Who do you want to talk about?
Which one do you want to do first?
Let's do, do you want to do Garrick and Danielle?
Yeah. So the two big drama things with them in this episode, which was hilarious that, like, we just jumped from, like, this very intense conversation with lots of, like, God
lots
stuff
of
in
stuff
it.
To talk about, lots of dynamic person, like, a lot of things
lots
going
of
on
stuff
there.
Like, there's just a lot of layers going on.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the episode, there's, like, this big bomb that's dropped that, like, Garrick's still on the dating sites. And, like, it just gets worse and worse as they keep talking. Like he at first is like, oh, yeah, like, I get messages, but I don't look at them. And she's like, you're lying. Like, you looked at new people. And then it just keeps escalating to the point where, like, Natalia's like, how many are you on? And he's like, 10.
10 dating sites. What the actual, like, that he's still on when he's married and he's got this and he's got his whole family down in Mexico to go propose.
He's seriously dating this woman. Yeah. And I'm just like, first of all, when I was single and dating, I was not on 10 dating apps. Like,
well, and that whole scene. Yeah, I know, right? Like, I didn't know there
were a lot
weren't
of
10.
Dating apps.
10 didn't exist back when I was doing that.
I mean, that's fair. Maybe 10 didn't exist back then, but still, that seems excessive.
It does. Well, okay. Let's talk about this. This whole thing, too, is like, Danielle's all pissed off because she sells him out, right? She's like, no, I know you're on this. It's a lie because I know you're still on them. Like, this is clearly a conversation they've had. And she's like, and I've asked you for months to get off those things and you haven't. And she's asking you right now. She finds out right now that you're still on them. So you've been lying to her. She didn't know. And you're going to get off on her.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't
and
get
not
off
for me.
Her.
Yep.
And he's just like,
he literally just looks like a guy who just got, like, totally caught out and does not know what to do.
Like, he's and he just even says that, like, in his interview, like, I don't know what to do right now. Like, these two women are coming after me. They're cornering me on my behavior. They're calling me out on my behavior. And he's
lying,
like,
if I didn't get some pleasure out of that.
Yeah, but you know what? The wheels are turning. He's trying to figure out a way that he can spin God gave him a revelation in his magic garage about why he needed to do this and lie to one at this time, you know, while he
was
he was trying to spin it.
So the earlier drama was when
back up.
Yeah, so we're gonna back up since you just referenced that. So see, told y'all it wouldn't be as linear. So just bouncing around. So so Danny sits down with Natalia. And Natalia's like, I'm not cool moving forward if you're still like afraid. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they seem to be hashing it out kind of okay. Like they're having a conversation with the translator app, but like they're having a conversation. And then Garrick, of course, walks in and then messes it all up. Right. And so you can tell that like she shuts down when he's there because she doesn't feel like she can be honest. Absolutely. Because he's like, oh, well, like, did you tell her that you were afraid? And so, she's like,
what's her name? Natalie is like, or Natalia, she's like, you know, oh, Danny's telling me that she's afraid.
Right.
And so Garrick's like, you told her you were afraid.
Yeah.
Like he comes after
and then
her.
Danny felt like she had to backtrack because she was like, no. She's like, no, no, I didn't really say that. And then Natalia's like, no, you did. Like you said you were afraid because of Roberta. And then that she whole admits situation. It.
She's,
yeah, oh, then yeah, she's like, oh, yeah, I did say that. And then you could see Garrick just getting like really upset at her. And I felt like in that moment, I was like, oh, this is not going to be good for her.
Yeah.
Like,
this is where shit got real. I was like, oh, damn. Then, like, you're seeing all the leakage right here of the dynamic of their relationship.
Yep. And then, like, good for Natalia, she was like, can I just talk to Danny for a minute? Like without you? Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she saw it. Yeah. Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I actually
the same language.
Suddenly really like Danielle. I mean, Natalia, because she likes Danielle more than she's sticking up for Danielle more than Danielle sticks up for Danielle.
Totally.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
But it's because culturally she hasn't been allowed to. Like, because whatever Garrick wants to do, Garrick gets to do, right?
Right.
So Garrick leaves, and then they keep talking, and it seems like they sort of hash some stuff out, and it was okay. And then she goes back to talk to Garrick, and she's like, yeah, it's okay. I'm still, like, working stuff out, but, like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But in the middle of all of that...
Yes. You have Garrick.
There's a lot of things that go down as far as, like, they say a lot of stuff about God and, like, other stuff. So... this is the first time we hear Garrick pulling out this thing. He's like, well, I had a vision at one point and I saw me with five wives and they were good.
What does he mean by that? They were good.
I don't know.
What does he mean?
Is like, he quotes? So like, here's what I'm wondering, if he's quoting Genesis, because every time God creates something in like the creation story in Genesis, it says, and it was good.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
So
okay.
I'm wondering if he's like quoting that, and it was like, and they were good. Like God created this family.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
They were good.
Yeah. Since he's trying to emulate, it's God talking to him. Okay. If God's telling
him,
like, it's good.
Okay. I have a lot of questions about this because we haven't heard this yet. And you would think they've been on three seasons now. This is their third.
Have they said five wives? Yeah.
No, never. Mm-mm. So I'm like, is this just Garrick making stuff up? Like, in the middle of stuff, or, right? Like, or I'm just very confused. Like what is happening with that?
Well, this is why I was saying in the other scene, and he's like, I don't know what to do. It's like his brain was trying to conjure some godly vision, how he could spin this, right? Like the way he did right there, he was on this earlier one. I had this vision of five wives. They were good. The scene there started poorly for me with when Garrick was saying, oh, you told her you were sad, and, you know, I was making fun of it, the way he approached her, but it really was kind of terrifying because you got like a glimpse of like, oh shit, he's about to like unleash, and it like shows so much. It's like you're not allowed to have actual fear. Like she has actual fear of it. He doesn't care that she has actual fear of it. He cares that she pretends that she needs to pretend like she doesn't and that she's happy because that's what he wants. So he gives zero fucks whether she's happy or sad. It's just she needs to act happy because that's her role.
Right. Because that's what she's supposed to be.
All of that was conveyed in that one. You said,
yep, just that one. That one interchange. It was so crazy. And then when they're talking about fear, this is a direct quote from Garrick. I wrote it down. He says, "Fear is never from God. So you'll lose out on your blessing if you live in fear." And I'm like, that now, is some whacked out theology right there. Yeah,
like I ain't no Bible scholar, but that's why I have you tell me that.
So
that,
like, if you just ended it,
a godly
thing.
Well,
so like, okay, so the first half is fine. Fear is never from God. Okay, cool. Like, God is good all the time. Fear is not a thing that comes from God. Okay. I can get on board with that.
But then, I mean, do I believe that? I don't know. I don't know.
But like,
fear is good. I think there's some fear is good, healthy.
Yeah, I just mean, he means like if you're called to do something, right? Like that was the context. So like, okay, I get like it. Fear is not from God. And if you're like called to do something, like sometimes you're just afraid and like you have to like, you know, like God helps give you courage to do so. Right. So like in the context, that makes sense to me. But then, so you'll lose. I can't even say this with a straight face, man. So you'll lose out on your blessing if you live in fear. Like, talk about some crazy works righteousness crap right there. Like, it is all on you. You need to not live in fear, and you better work that ish out, or you are not going to get your blessing from God, is what he's saying, which is totally messed up.
That sounds like some bullshit. God doesn't actually wait. I mean, I'm confused about if I live in fear, if I'm in fear. So when they talk about God fearing, if I'm fearing God, I can't get my blessings. Like, so, this sounds like hypocritical bullshit right there. What am I supposed to do?
Most people don't. So that's like old school language. Most people translate that as more like reverencing God.
Okay. Like, as a healthy respect. Like,
yeah. Not like fearing God. Like, fearing God for them in that context meant like reverencing God, not like actually fear.
I want people to actually fear me, though. Like,
I mean, I fear you.
As your consigliere, part of my job is to invoke fear in other people. Like, that's part of my job, right? As but I also want a healthy respect as well. But respect based out of fear is fine too, as in that role. I'm just saying, for me.
Well, here's the thing: if people are fearing you, then they're losing out on their blessing, according to Garrick. So,
okay,
I'm
just saying. The blessing of being around me. I mean, you fear me, you're losing the blessing of being around the Katrina experience.
I enjoy the Katrina experience. I'm just
saying. Thank you. I appreciate
it. So like, but how messed up is that statement? Mm-hmm. Like, it's super messed up. Like, I literally
tell me,
just
Pastor Becca, how messed up it is. Because so messed you up know because, I don't. Educate me.
Okay. So what makes me angry about this statement, fear is never from God, so you lose out on your blessing if you live in fear, is that it's all on the person. Like, they have to work out their fear on their own, or they're not going to be blessed by God, which is crap, because God's blessings to us are not contingent on what we do, because we would never get any blessings from God if that were the case, because we're broken human beings, right? We do crap.
Do dumb shit all the time, and he's still like, bless you, my child.
Exactly. Like, like God's love and blessing are not based upon how good we are. Right. So like the fact that he's
my love is, though, like, if you're not going to bring me coffee that's at the right temperature with the right amount of Splenda in it, then I'm just not going to talk to you. You're just not going to get the blessing if your works aren't appropriate.
See, and this is why you're not God.
Damn it. You know, they tell me that in AA all the time, that I'm not God, and yet I always try.
So what this statement reminds me of is when on Lost Resort, when I was basically told I didn't have enough faith and that's why my baby died. It's very similar. It's basically like, you didn't do what you were supposed to, so God didn't bless you.
That's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that about your situation, feeling how awful that was. When you put it in that term, like equating Danielle, I mean, it's not the same thing, obviously, but looking at it in that same, with that same, I guess, paradigm, that does make it oh, wow, that's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, it's awful, right? And he's basically telling Danielle, like, you need to figure your ish out on your own or, like, you're screwed and, like, God's not going to bless you.
Why she looks so like, tortured all the time.
Well, yeah, because she knows feels how like she's not measuring up. Yep, and she's not measuring up, and she feels like that means God is forsaking her, basically.
That's why she looks so tortured all the time.
Yep.
Oh, it's so awful.
And so, and this is why, like, it's just in high control religious groups where, like, there's a very specific standard of living that you have to live up to or you're screwed, basically, right? Like, and not in the good way, like in mm-hmm. the, like, right? Like in the, like, you are not getting blessed by God. God doesn't love you. You're not going to get all the good stuff that comes from God, like mercy and forgiveness and peace and all that. Like, you're not getting any of that if you can't get your ish together.
Well, isn't that the basic tenet of, like, a lot of these high control religious groups? Like, totally. You know, you have to wear your prayer dresses and your hair like this and obey the prophet and obey the, you know, train on the guns, you know, and listen to David Koresh sing, you know, play the guitar. And you have to do these things in order to have God's blessing, either in the afterlife or now, like whatever their right. particular thing is, right? That's how yeah. I understand it. Okay.
Yeah, well, and you could also argue that there are some standard, I put standard in quotes, but like religions that are considered more mainstream now that also do this as well, right? Mm. There's high control groups within like standard religions as
like
well.
Like what? Talk to me about it.
So the example that I use a lot is like evangelical or fundamentalist Christian groups.
Okay. Yeah.
So like for example, like Danielle and Garrick are probably from one of those groups. Or right,
which
say,
we still haven't find out where they're from, but we're gonna
yeah.
we're gonna find it.
Or we can talk about spoiler alert, we're gonna talk about the Ryans.
Yes, for example, the cult the Ryans came from. We could just go right, to that. Which, if you...
right, which is very clearly a high control group where there was all sorts of stuff happening and a lot of control with women specifically in that mm-hmm. group.
Okay. Okay.
And so, like,
minute, but...
right. So those are two like Christian okay. groups okay. that are okay. high control, for example.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. So. I came away from this episode really liking Nathalia.
Yeah. So let me, can I
read
a quote?
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Cause this is a Nathalia quote. So that's a good segue. One of the things she says to them is, you told me that God spoke to you, but I don't think God yes. would want to see Danny unhappy.
Yes. That's exactly what I wanted to. Okay, go.
And it was so good. Like, I literally was like, thank you for being the voice of reason.
Yes, that's why, because she cares more about Danny than Danny cares about Danny. And she sees it and she's like, no, this is not any kind of loving God that I believe in wouldn't want Danny to be this way. And it shows how much connection there actually is between the two women, which we hadn't seen yet. Right. We had seen it with Danny and Roberta. There's clearly a lot of love between them. We hadn't really seen it with these two. And this kind of shows that they have been connecting. Clearly, right. if she's picking up on Danny's feelings.
Right.
And calling, she's not afraid to call Garrick out on it, which I love because she's not used to the high control of nature of him, right? That
right. And what's funny is, like, Danny even says, like, in the interview, she's like, wow, I can't believe that Nathalia like is able to read me as well as she is, basically.
Yeah. And so then says,
well, and so Garrick leaves. That's when Garrick leaves, right? Nathalia's right. like, yo, get out.
Yeah.
We need to talk. And this is when Danny like doubles down and says, no, God brought us all together and God wants Nathalia to be a wife with them.
Because Garrick came in and reminded her of her place.
Exactly. Exactly. She feels like she has to backtrack. And I don't think she's lying. Like, I think she does think that God brought them together. But with that said, like, she thinks this is moving way too fast. Like, she's already established that. And so, like, she can still think God brought them together, but also be like, let's take this at a right. normal pace.
But Garrick doesn't want to take it slow.
Right.
So she has to conform herself somehow to be okay with this because Garrick said this and Garrick says it's from God. So... she, like you said, that's why she's so tortured all the time, right? Because she's yeah. she doesn't feel, her internal feelings don't match anything, and she's so conflicted about this desire to please God.
Well, because pleasing God and pleasing Garrick are conflated for her.
Yes, yes. It's all the same. Yeah,
it's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I find it's heartbreaking. I mean, obviously, but it's also so hard because for me, just because I didn't grow up in an environment where I was taught to believe any of this. So maybe that's part of why I'm so fascinated with religious cults and religious high control groups, because it wasn't something I grew up with. So seeing people who are like the David Koresh people, what they did because in the name of God, they believe that God is, that this is what God wants for them. And to be so into that belief, to believe that so heartily that you will participate in these activities, just is such a, like, it's so hard for me to understand. So maybe that's part of why I watch this stuff, because I'm trying to understand what it is that is, like, Garrick is just a creepy weirdo and he's using God to get what he wants. But Danielle clearly is tortured. She really believes this about that God really doesn't think she is going to love her if she voices her genuine feelings of concern about the speed of this relationship.
Totally. And I think also, so it's interesting for me. So I do research on new religious movements, which is what we call groups that pop up and start their own religion. Sometimes they're an offshoot of a traditional or standard religion. Sometimes they're a new thing.
I want to take your classes. When you tell me about the stuff you're researching for your classes, I'm like, oh, I want to take that class. And I'm like the last thing from a religious scholar you will ever find. But I'm like, I am academically curious about a lot of things. And reality TV and the intersection with religion seems to be one of those really, it's just academically really fascinating to me. So I would totally love to take.
Well, you could totally audit it.
Oh, yeah, I totally could, huh?
You could. Yeah, I'm teaching a new religious movements and care class. So we're talking about new religious movements in general, but then also added to that of like when a new religious movement is also a high control group. How do you then care for folks who are trying to get out of that or just got out of it or whatever?
Right, And, especially from a pastoral care perspective, that's really interesting because that may be where they have trust issues and or they, you know, like I can only be in, I can't talk to somebody outside of religion or I can only talk to somebody. I don't know. There's just
a lot of layers. Yeah. And like what's super interesting for, so the reason this course exists is because, well, I do research on new religious movements. So like that is always interesting to me. But in addition to that, I added the care part to it because, and I want to go on the record, not all new religious movements end up being high control groups, right? Like, I think there's this like standard assumption that like, oh, it's a cult and like everyone's brainwashed and like all this stuff. When in reality, most of the new religious movements are like boring as all get out. And like people don't know they exist because they only have like 30 people in them or something, right?
Like, I just can't imagine that. Like, as long as religion has been around, is there anything new about it? I don't know. Like,
right. And like,
everything's recycled, right?
Well, and that's the question too, right? Because like a lot of these new religious movements pull from different religions to like make their own thing. Mm-hmm. But also in addition to that, like how long is something new is a question that like scholars are like, right? So like, for example, a lot of people still throw in like the Mormons, the... Mm-hmm. You know, LDS as like still a new religious movement or the Jehovah's Witnesses as a new religious movement. Whereas some people are like, yo, like they started in the 1800s, like they're not new anymore.
Interesting. Interesting.
So, anyway, just very fascinating questions that people ask. But I think oftentimes people assume like all new religious movements are cults because there was like in the 80s and 90s, there was like this like cult craziness where like people were literally like kidnapped and like abused and like tried, they called it deprogramming, and it's like really messed up, right? Like that is not how you help someone. And it's like,
I remember that
right
stuff. The way you approached it then, it's no
totally
they know better now, they know different now.
Yes. And so like that's why, and so my course is built on some of that where it's like we can't assume that all new religious movements are like crazy cult land. Mm-hmm. But B, like, okay, I live in the land of where Nexium existed.
Right. And you have some connections to it.
Yeah. And so like
sound like you were in it. No.
No. I wasn't in it. But like a lot of I came across some people who had been through, you know, some of their programs and stuff and needed to talk out like, what does this mean for me to like leave this high control group? And I was like,
where you live and work. I mean,
right. Like everything is there. And I'm just like, I am not trained to do this. Like I had this moment of like, oh, I did not have training in seminary, like how to deal with someone who like,
none of your degrees in God taught you how to deprogram someone.
Right. And so like, and what's interesting about it is, you know, there's this phrase called deconstructing, where mm-hmm. you take all of the beliefs you had previously and examine them and try to figure out what needs dismantling and what can stay, or maybe nothing stays. It just depends.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Which is why like some people, so the deconstructing language comes from philosophy, but also was kind of taken and used for like the ex-evangelical movement, which is fascinating. People who leave the ex-evangelicals, evangelical Christianity. Sorry, I should be clear.
I figured that was what that meant.
Yeah, they call it ex-evangelicals. But like, what's interesting about that is some ex-evangelicals like completely leave religion altogether, whereas others are like, I don't want that flavor of religion. Like, I either want to be part of a different religion or be part of a different flavor of Christianity that's not high control.
Okay.
So anyway, that's a lot of like background. But point being,
no, that's all fascinating.
When you're in a high control group, which I would argue that Danny and Garrick obviously are, because I'm seeing a lot of dynamics that you see in a lot of high control situations. Like, all of it is based around this idea that like you have to do what this person says, because what this person says is equivalent to like what God wants. And if you go away from that, like you're done. Like God's not going to care about you anymore.
You're flipping. You're flipping God off basically by not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all very fascinating watching Garrick and Danielle in that dynamic.
Wow. That's fascinating. I love it. I love it. Now, I mean, there's some very scary things. Like I said, when he came in and said, normally Garrick looks, he just sits there and looks dumb, right? And he doesn't
he just
blink.
Looks very confused most of the
he's
time.
He's dead behind the eyes and his eyes don't blink and he just sits there looking. But then you see these little, bits of control and that just leaks. Like I said, that one scene where he said, oh, you told her you were scared.
Yep.
The tone of his voice, his gestures, his body language, all of that leaked so much about
it was so threatening. It was like quietly threatening, which is even more terrifying.
Yeah. And you saw her reaction to it, which was to immediately deny that she ever said that. And then, you know, she was getting as meek as possible. Her demeanor completely changed when he walked into the room. And that may have been one of the first times we have really seen that dynamic with them.
Yeah. We've seen bits and pieces on and off, like when he'll say something in an interview and then she'll like make a face and, you know, you can tell that she doesn't like agree with it, but like she can't say anything.
Right. Right.
And so like, honestly, the first time we saw her say something and be like, that's a lie, was when she was like, I'm not on the dating apps. What are you talking about?
Looking at new people. And she's like, and she's saying that's a lie because she's there looking at them with him.
Totally. So that was really fascinating to me that we saw her like totally shrink, like literally like physically, emotionally shrink. Mm-hmm. And then the situation where he's like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she's like, nope. We're not doing this. So it was just really interesting to watch.
What I thought was also interesting is her being so, so she was really upset about him agreeing to be off of them for Natalia, but not agreeing to get off of them for her. She's very, very hurt by that. And obviously, I mean, it's a slight, no matter how you look at it, it's what's bigger than a slight? Like it's, you know, that's a punch to the gut, right?
Yeah. Totally.
But there are so many things on so many earlier seasons that do the equivalent. Like she was fine with being called large wife with her and Roberta. Like Roberta
and
was small
wife.
And they
just like sort of glossed over that. And I was like, ooh.
And like we agreed you're not going to sleep with her, and then you did. Oh, well, okay. Like, there's so many other things that have happened. Right. Now, I agree, this should piss her off, but so should all the other things.
Maybe it was just they had all, like, built up to the point where she was just like, yeah, I'm not going to.
Or maybe Natalia, being around Natalia, is giving her a little bit of strength. Because she's seen Natalia stand up to Garrick. Possible. And Garrick not running everything, roughshod over everything.
Yeah. I definitely, I'm with you. Like, I wasn't so sure about Natalia before. Yeah.
And until then, this.
Until this episode. And then I was like, yes, you're awesome.
Okay.
Please,
yeah.
Please, please keep being awesome.
Speaking of not so awesome.
Oh no. Are we moving on to the Ryans?
Yeah, let's move on to the Ryans. And so yeah, there's a lot to talk about here because we could go and probably will go on to quite a tangent. So just letting you guys know, we're going to talk very big cult stuff here because of the Ryans connections. So let's talk about the Ryans.
Okay. So I get a message from Katrina earlier today. It was basically like, oh my gosh, I found out who is the Ryan's, the female.
Yeah, because I forwarded you an article from Starcasm. Our friend Aza over at Starcasm, yes, wrote this article about the religious organization that these guys come from. And that's something that we'd been looking at, like with Garrick and Danielle and with them. Right. So Starcasm did this episode or this article on it. So I forwarded it to you. Yeah.
And I had previously searched around and trying to find out where they were from, because she at one point, like in passing in an interview when they first introduced the couple, was like, oh, well, you know, did she say stepdad or dad? I don't remember, but she said, my stepdad or dad was a pastor, and he, you know, read scripture and saw all these, you know, scripture passages about polygamy and realized like, that's something we should do. And so I
got all these things justify why he wants to
do polygamy. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And so like, I come from a polygamous family. So like, whatever, no big deal, basically is what she said.
That's how it was presented to us.
And that was it. Like, there was no other background around like her family.
Yeah, no big deal. Now we know just why. Just a guy. Random, right. No big deal. No, nobody important.
Now, meanwhile, I'm sitting there like, okay, what kind of pastor is this? Like, where did this come? I need to know where this is. And so I did a bunch of researching, but of course I was searching with the name Ryans and nothing was coming up. So I was like, okay, well, I guess we're never going to find that out. I was wrong.
Yeah, because they found out.
So people who are much better at investigative reporting than I am found out. Do you want to break it? I'll let you break it.
No, you know. I don't know. The Alamo P. I never heard of this cult.
Yeah. So
I've never heard of this cult. So I have gone on a deep YouTube dive since I heard about it. So I'm just learning about it now. But why don't you explain it? Because I don't know anything about
her stepdad. Was Tony Alamo, which if you haven't heard of them, I encourage you to Google Tony Alamo Ministries and get very freaked out. Basically, it was a polygamous high control religious group, which is
in the 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah, into 90s, it sounded like little bit. So they, and I'll talk more about this because this is something that's been rolling around in my brain for a little bit, but like, as I've been watching Seeking Sister Wife, but like, they were all the bad things that can happen in polygamy, where like, he was marrying like girls as young as 8 years old, right?
He himself was.
Yes, he himself, right. And then was like encouraging other people to marry young women. Mm-hmm. There were all sorts of other weird life things that a lot of them lived in like communes and like very much had a very strong hand on like how people were expected to live.
And they couldn't flirt. And it was like a lot of stuff of how you behaved. It reminded me a lot of what Heaven's Gate, the Heaven's Gate cult people. Mm. Like, they had to live a certain way where they shaved their heads, yep. removed their own identities. They were androgynous. They're trying, you know, they changed their names because that's just a vessel. And, you know, there it seemed like, and there was a lot of control over their food and what they could eat and when they could walk and where they could do. And it felt like there was a lot of what I've seen so far. There was a lot of that.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that in most high control groups, right? Like pretty much every aspect of life is like figured out and you're told how to live that way.
The way you dress, what you eat, how you behave.
Yep. All of that. Gender roles specifically. So I just read one of the textbooks I'm using for my class, which is specifically talking about gender in new religious movements. And what's interesting, which I did not know until I read this, but like a lot of new religious movements, they start pretty progressively about how women can be involved. So if you look at how Tony Alamo Ministries started, it was him and his wife. Right. So Susan
started the whole damn thing.
Totally. And then as a new religious movement gets established.
Okay.
They start.
Once it goes viral.
Yeah. Like once like, it's not just like three people in a room, right? Like there's actual people involved and it's been around for a few years or whatever. Then it starts to be more in line with the patriarchy because that's how most societies are. Not all societies in our world, right? But like most of these new religious movements, when they get started, they are also living in a patriarchal society. And they at first are set up as like, we're the opposite of that. But then as they get established, they want to be more in line with how society views gender. And so then they start to basically take back all of the ways that they had like given women opportunity that they may not have had in
society. So it's like a bait and switch.
Yeah, basically. But they don't do it on purpose. But what's so interesting about it is it's not how they start, right? So like, for example, like Nexium is the same way. Like once you know that pattern and you start looking at new religious movements, you're like, holy crud, this is so true. Right. So like Nexium started and it was like Nancy Saldman was like starting it with Keith Raniere.
Yeah.
Like, right. And then like as they got established, it became like, oh, well, men and women have specific roles. And then it became, okay, then we have this like DOS thing. Where they're all there to just like have sex with Keith, right?
Right.
And so like it didn't just like do that randomly. Like I think people just like think that like it just turned on a dime, but in reality it was like this pattern where like gender roles are very progressive and then they change. Yeah, I know.
I want to take that class too. I want to take that class. Yeah.
So anyway. There you go. You got part of my unit on gender and sexuality.
Oh my God, this is fascinating. Fascinating. Well, so I was watching this stuff. So this cult, I'd never heard of it, right? When we looked, you know, saw this article, I was like, okay, let me go down a YouTube rabbit hole. And so I came across a set of videos on YouTube. This woman put out, and she clearly has done her research and stuff. And it's a two-part video, and each are like an hour and a half, so it's a lot of information. But the first video is like Susan, it's all about her, not necessarily her early life, but like her younger life when her daughter Chris was younger. And I guess Chris eventually went on to write a book, and that's where a lot of this information came from. Because it talks about all of this stuff of it seems like most of what we know about Susan comes from Chris's perspective about things that she was doing and acting, cons she was pulling and abuses, that because she was really, really abusive to her kid. And like her daughter, Chris, was dating somebody who was going to go to Stanford and he'd been saving money. So what she did was she swooped in, sweet talked him, seduced him, basically took him away from her daughter.
Oh
yeah. And started dating him herself. Keep in mind, he's like 14 or 15, maybe 16 at this time. Start sleeping with him, cons him out of the money, and then he disappears.
Whoa.
So this is while like Chris was like a teenager. Okay. When the daughter was a teenager. So fast forward. So this is what I'm learning. With the background of Susan.
Wow.
Fast forward, Susan, because I guess Chris's father is the person, is one of the guys that is like some mob guy she was dating before Tony. And so she, at some point later, mom has daughter and daughter's boyfriend over. Daughter's boyfriend, Ed, I think his name was, had them all come over. And she was doing her, like, sermon thing that she does, that she, like, I guess captivates them. It's like a snake charmer. She, like, says all the stuff, and apparently she, like, captivates them with her words. So she convinced them all to join her cult. Like, start a cult. That's how they all started, was like her daughter's boyfriend was like the first guy in her cult, the second boyfriend that she seduced. Like, it's really fucked up. And then that's, she hadn't, we hadn't barely even started talking about what Tony was doing, but Susan was definitely the ringleader of this, and I got it all started as far as how the control started. Batshit crazy, batshit abusive, like
awful stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, the fact that she's just on this TV show being like, oh, yeah, it was fine. I lived in a
polygamous family. My stepdad was this guy, this pastor who owned the Bible for reasons to be polygamous. Yeah, that stepfather is the head of one of the most dangerous fucking ridiculous cults out there.
Yeah. And, like, I so, okay. So this is something that's been rolling around in my brain a lot while we've been watching this. So I don't know where to start. So, like, okay, so one of the things I've been doing too, and Katrina knows this because I messaged her about it, but I've also been watching Big Love.
Yes.
While we've been watching this, because I've never watched it before.
And I decided to start doing the same. It's now my background a lot totally. Of the time.
So it's been really fascinating to watch, like, a scripted show about polygamy and then also watching, like, a reality TV show about polygamy at the same time.
Well, and the scripted show about polygamy was done so long ago. Like, right. The times were really, really different when that came out.
Totally. Because, you know, it was still, you were still a criminal if you were part of polygamy. Yeah. And, like, since then it's been decriminalized. Which, you know, is, like, the same as decriminalization of other things. Where it's not, like, not illegal, but they're not
going to, come after you for it.
After you and throw you in jail, right?
Yeah.
And so what's been interesting, so in Big Love, right, there's this juxtaposition. Right. You're watching two models of polygamy.
Right.
You're watching the main family that we follow, which, there's Bill some Paxton dysfunction family. The Bill Paxton family, which there's dysfunction there for sure.
Uh-huh.
But, like, that's viewed as, like, the healthy polygamy family. Right.
Right.
Whereas you see this, like, crazy offshoot Mormon group, where there's all sorts of, like, it's what you saw in the Tony Alamo Ministries, where, like, polygamy is just an excuse for, like, old dudes to, like, marry and have sex with
it's teenagers, like,
and kids.
It's I think it's, like, trying to show the difference, like, for in terms that, like, our listeners might understand. It's like the difference between, like, sister wives. Right. So we've got that modern version of Sister Wives versus, like, the Warren Jeffs.
Yes.
Cult.
Yes.
Right. So you've got the fundamentalist old school prairie dress people. That's this old, the offshoot, fundamentalist offshoot on the show. Whereas the Sister Wives, the Cody and them, are the Bill Paxton and Chloe Svegney and them.
Right. Now, with all that said, like, obviously the healthy polygamy group is still based in patriarchy, and there's a lot of, like,
it's all issues. Relative.
Right. But, like, comparatively, right? Yeah. Like, he's not having sex with, like, little girls.
Right.
And he came from that group where and what happened to his character on the show is that what happens often to young men in the group is that they're threats to, like, marrying the young girls. So they get kicked out of the group. Right. So that the old dudes
at, can, like, have 18 all the young years girls. Old. Yeah.
Yeah. Or less, like, 14 and up.
There's a documentary called The Lost Boys about that.
Yeah. So,
really good.
So I've been, like, that's been rolling around in my brain while watching Seeking Sister Wife, because, like, I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot, and maybe it's just because I have a, like, 15 month old son, and, like,
oh, is he that old already?
I know. Isn't it crazy? He's like, almost wasn't he
just born?
I know. Right. But, like, raising a kid in a nuclear family is hard, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, American society is so focused on this, like, nuclear family situation where, like, you, like, literally have to pay for the village to help raise your child.
Right.
Like, if you want to go have a date night, like, you have to pay for it because mm-hmm. to have someone babysit your kid, like, it's just nuts. So like part of me completely understands this idea of like having this village around you to help like bolster the family. Like I'm not saying it should be like one dude and a bunch of wives necessarily. Right,
but the idea, well, that's like the all idea, the best friends that talk about like these communes, you know, we're just gonna yeah. like all the best friend
like, houses. Not that I'm saying it should be like this, but like we've been watching the movie Midsommar.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
It's so good. It's so good. It's
on the list. It's up, on the list. Yeah. But it's
so good.
It's on the list. Like, it's on the list for sure.
But like I'm watching it and I'm like, I totally understand this. Like literally, like the whole concept of it is like on this commune, in the Swedish commune, like they all raise the kids together. And I'm like, man, my tired ass would really love some. You know, right now.
I'm of a certain lady of a certain age, right? I'm turning 50 this year, which Woo! Means
I'm turning 40.
Yeah,
we both have like.
You should come birthdays. Down for my birthday party. My girlfriend is throwing me a birthday party, a 50th birthday party.
Yes, please. That'd be fun.
Yeah, come. We can do the whole thing. It'll be in October. You can come down, and Lexi will be here. We could do all the things we talk about down here. Anyway,
I love it.
Kaya, yeah, Lexi and Kaya better come because yeah. Anyway, anyway, so I was born in October of 1974. Okay. And I was born in at Stanford Hospital, which if for those of you guys who don't know what Stanford Hospital is, it's Palo Alto. It's the Bay Area. It's San Francisco in the early 70s. I have an older sister she's like 4 years older than I am. She's born in 1970. I won't tell you what her name is, but it's. Let's just say my parents are really hippie. Okay. My parents are the dirty hippies that they talk about. The Alamo people they talk about. That's what their victim base was the dirty hippie, because they, a lot of them had, just like disability money and unemployment funds and things. So they wanted to get their government benefits.
So the technical term is they came out of the Jesus people movement.
Is that what the technical term is?
Yeah, that's like in the 60s and 70s when like there was a lot of evangelizing around hippie type folk.
Okay, because anyway. On this, they would, I apparently she's quoting, they would refer to these people as dirty hippies. Like that was the Alamo's language that they used. Anyway, so
which is like lovely when you're trying to like reach out to people, but anyway.
Yeah, right. I mean, so I my parents are dirty hippies. Like they are full blown flower children. They sort of as a young adults in Berkeley in the 60s. So we're talking protesting People's Park. We're talking all of that stuff, right? So that's the stock I come from.
Yeah.
When it comes to this stuff. So dirty hippies, you know. And I completely forget what my point was going to be.
I was going to say, where were you going with that?
I don't remember. There was a point to it. It'll come back to me. But that's MS okay. brain. Thanks. I'm like in the middle of a relapse. It's not fun. So
I'm so sorry. I get brain fog when my MCAS kicks in too. So
yeah. Yeah. Like the brain fog is one thing. Like it's the physical stuff I'm dealing with right now.
I'm sorry. It's
a pain in the ass. Ugh. But yeah, it also, but anyway, yeah. So anyway, there was a point to all that about, and I'm sure we'll come back to it, but there were like, oh yeah, it's gone.
It's okay. But that's how like the Tony Alamo stuff started, was that they were like connecting with hippies mm-hmm. basically, and then going from there.
Right.
Which oftentimes that's how a lot of new religious movements get started, is like people find people on the margins who are already on the margins.
And so then, I remember what I was going to say. I remember growing up in the 70s, sort of being in Northern California, surrounded by that and serial killers. Cause the 70s in Northern California, there was like, that was like the heyday of like guys driving around on the freeway and picking up little girls and stuff. Like all of us, all Gen Xers have survived at least one kidnapping attempt. I mean, I can recall mine very clearly.
Gosh, that's terrifying.
Well, you know what he said? It was the guy, I was just walking by my house and I didn't live in a great area because we didn't have any money growing up. So I was like, you know, the area I lived was, you know, let's just say it was on, you know, its own side of the tracks, whatever. Anyway, I'm walking this guy drive up and he was asking me where the closest hospital was. And I was like, well, Stanford Hospital's right there, because I was living Menlo Park at the time. I was like, it's right there. I'm like, But like where we were, like where we lived is like off an alley behind some commercial buildings. It's not like we're in an area where you'd get a lot of traffic normally. It might perhaps be an area where a lot of kids play. I don't know. Maybe that's why he was driving around there. And so I told him where the hospital was, and he was like, well, you know, the issue is kind of personal and I need some medication. Can you help me put some medication on it? I was like, yeah, no. And I turned and I like took off.
That is terrifying.
Right? Right? Like that's what I grew up with. So I was surrounded by, you know, the Night Stalker and Gold State Killer stuff. All that stuff was happening in Northern California in the 70s. As were all of these, like, maybe that's also another reason why I'm so fascinated by this stuff is because that's because
you come out of there.
Because yeah. I come out of that, you know, I am from a family of dirty hippies. We were probably, you know, how many times I was solicited to go to join a cult. I do remember very specifically trying to be recruited to Scientology by a classmate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, she gave me some notebook or some flyer on Dianetics, I remember, and she was like, and if I get you guys to come to it with us, like come to the meeting with me, I get $5, $10, $15, like pointed to all of us. So like, and we were in middle school.
Wow.
Like I hadn't even, like I was like eighth grade or under.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good example of a new religious movement, by the way.
Scientology. Okay, there you go. So that's my whole point is like, so I came of age in this environment where it was like rich for girls to get raped, kidnapped and raped and killed, and for cults like Heaven's Gate and all that other stuff to pop up. But also, as I'm sure, you know, the history of the 70s and stuff, the counterculture was, you know, all the stuff that was happening and then that made people searching for other ways of thinking so popular.
Right. And then that's why there was this big crackdown on like cults, or everyone's freaking out about cults. Right. And there you've got the kidnapping and the deprogramming and all this stuff. And then in addition to that, you've got the satanic panic stuff.
Yeah.
Which was like very real.
McMartin daycare story.
And I remember all that because, right, like I grew up in the 80s and 90s. So like I remember that pretty strongly when I was like pretty young.
So I think that was the story. So I don't know. I guess I was in college and freshman year English or something, communications class or something. And I had to do research topic and then present on it. And I somehow did child abuse in daycare centers. And so I had come across the McMartin preschool case. So that's what I presented my case on, right? That's what my speech was about or whatever it was. I presented the story on the McMartin preschool thing. None of the satanic panic stuff really came up at that point. It was just some of the other abuses and stuff. And then a couple years later, I had another class and I was like, you have to go research a topic and present on it. And I was like, oh, I'll just reinvent. I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to go back to the well. Right. I already did a research topic on this. Let me go do this and just update the research. Well, in that time period is when they figured out that all of that stuff was bullshit. That McMartin preschool stuff actually happened. And it was all satanic panic. And they had this, you know, idea that there was some, you know, Satan worshiping thing, tunnels underneath preschool and all this stuff. What? Like, do you not know? You need to. Oh, there's a really good documentary on it. I'm going to show. I'll send you the link. It's a really good documentary on it.
Wow.
The Satanic Panic. And it goes into a lot of the psychology and stuff about the problem that they were having with these quote unquote child psychologists that were uncovering repressed memories. Well, that's all been debunked and stuff now. And it turns out, no, they're actually implanting things, you know, and it was it's awful. Anyway.
Yeah. But that's like, that seems to follow the same pattern of new religious movements where like stuff starts progressively. And then there's like this almost cultural backlash of like, okay, that was too much. Now we need to go back to like, reining this ish in, right? Like
right. The balance. So
just, right. And like it's not like, for example, like it's not shocking that after our first Black male president, there was a lot of backlash, like cultural Black backlash. Yeah. And like they were like, well, no, we're definitely not having a woman president after that.
Yeah. So the same thing happens.
politically, I was going to say, you know, yeah.
Totally. So anyway, so all of this is just very fascinating, and this is why I love research and I'm a big nerd. But
so going back to the show, though. So, yeah, yes. We've got this woman, this whatever, I forget her name, but we've got this woman who this husband and wife who after whatever 30 years of marriage and 16 kids decide that it's time for another wife and go out and they try to date this production assistant.
But right. And of course, this woman is like, I'm not doing this. So like they.
Yeah. So she doesn't show. She texts him, I'm chickening out. Yeah. What she said is that, you know, they didn't pay her to deal all that. She was like willing to like meet them in a bar, like be in a bar and say hi to him. But she wasn't willing to show up on a date with them.
A mostly empty bar, by the way.
God.
Which they comment on when they walk in.
There's nobody here. Well, yeah. Because it's probably like 2 o'clock on a Tuesday or some nonsense. Like, who's going to be there, right? Yeah, so that's like the storyline with them that they're showing. But the side storyline that we can't get past is that her quote-unquote stepfather, the pastor, is this really famous, really terrible, awful, no good, horrible cult leader who production had to have known of this connection.
There's no way they didn't know that. I mean, like, he's been put away for life, like more than life.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way they didn't know that.
This guy's in prison for the rest of his life. Like, that's not, we're not saying, oh, like, you know, he's a Cody. Like, he was just a douchebag. Like, he was doing really bad illegal shit, right?
Yeah, like, and what's interesting, like, so that's been super fascinating to watch Big Love too, because like, right, like there's this weird parallel of like, okay, so there's this polygamous family who's like a little dysfunctional, but also like not doing anything illegal and like decent human beings. Then you've got this other group, which are not only like having old dudes marry young girls, but then also in addition to that, like doing all this illegal crap that they shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And that's what you see in the Tony Alamo ministries, where like not only are they like marrying little girls, but they're also like doing all sorts of crazy illegal stuff that they shouldn't be doing.
They were primarily based on greed, apparently, is a lot of what I'm seeing. So everything they were doing to get money from their people and from the public and whatever, so they could live lavishly, right?
Totally.
Is kind of what I understand so far. So
what I read about it is like, you know, they set up basically on their commune, they set up where like everyone had to work in like the businesses that the commune owned, but they like barely paid them. Right. So like basically they were getting like almost free labor.
Well, that's like the fundamentalist people.
Yeah.
Do that too. Yeah.
Or Scientology.
They get donated to the church or whatever.
Yeah. And like, this is not to say volunteerism is a bad thing in religions, right? Like, volunteering is fine.
Service is different.
To an extent, right?
Service, like, we're not talking like forced labor camps are different.
Right. Very different situation. I just want to be very clear about that. But like in Scientology, where they have like from a very young age, people are expected to like work insane hours for the good of the church or whatever. Or like in the Hillsong documentaries, that was one of the themes that kept coming up, was like people were putting in insane hours and then like not getting paid. Anyway,
because they were so convinced that they wanted to do this, like you were revered to do this. Oh my god, you were just so brought into it, the charisma and stuff, that you were just compelled to volunteer and you were made to believe that like you were fulfilling God's calling by doing all working 25 hours.
Well, and that's the worst part of all of this, is like it's all based in like God has called me to do this, and so I have to do it. I can't abandon my calling from God.
Right.
But in reality, it's just a bunch of people who are just like, no, we're going to work you dry until you fall over because like we can, you know.
Right. God. I was going to remind me of something else, but I forgot now, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, we'll. I'm sure it'll come up in another.
But she literally is like, in that interview, she's like, I enjoyed my polygamous like
experience. She talked about her growing up in that family and it was all positive and great.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm like, he was married to 8-year-olds.
Well, yeah, she didn't get to see him that much, but you know,
oh my gosh,
was perfectly fine having all these other people around. What, other 8-year-olds?
Is that why? Ew. Because some of his wives were the same age as you, so it gave you friends?
Oh, gosh. Oh. Yeah. It's so, and that's why, like, it's interesting to me, because, like, most of the polygamous, like, you know, it's kind of like what I said about, like, most new religious movements, like, they're just boring. Like, I feel like most polygamous families are just boring. Like, they're just, like, yes, they're living, you know, I put in quotes, alternative lifestyle,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not really alternative in some religious
non-traditional family structure.
Yeah, non-traditional family structure or whatever. But, like, most of them are probably, like, pretty chill. So, yeah, like, it's just really fascinating to have, like, you know, like a few seasons ago, like the Winders, who were like super chill.
And they were so boring, they're no longer on the show.
No longer on the show, right?
They're just doing their thing.
With that said, obviously it was still very patriarchal. And
yes, clearly,
there are issues around that. But I'm just saying, like, they're kind of boring. Whereas you've got, like,
relative,
right? You've got the Ryans, who come out of, like, the Tony Alamo Ministries, and you're like, holy crap, this is really abusive and messed up. So, like, yeah. It's just interesting to watch different models of polygamy and how it can totally go off the rails very quickly.
For real. Now we really have to find where Garrick and Danielle came from.
I keep searching and
it's out there. It's out there somewhere. Somebody somewhere will find it and we'll figure it out.
I mean, if they found the Tony Alamo thing, because I had been searching, but obviously I wasn't searching the correct way because I was using the wrong last name, because she has a different last name that they searched for.
Oh,
I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah.
And I don't know if it's like a maiden name or whatever, but they use,
I don't
a
know, but Asia over at Sarcasm has got her sources. She's amazing. She does amazing work, amazing investigative work. And her stuff is typically believed because she has the documents. She bases her stuff on documents. Right. So, I know she's digging with Garrick and Danielle, but she hasn't been able to find them this many years out that they've been there, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll figure it out, I guess. Crazy. So yeah. their on the show story is stupid. But I'm really curious is to know. I wonder, like, okay, so one of the things they showed with them was that this girl, Stephanie, that they talked about, who was dating them and then disappeared, is now, like, suddenly back in their life and then said, show up and visit me, and then said no, and they're going to go anyway, apparently, because that seems very, well, we're going to show up anyway, even though she told us not to, which sounds very...
That seems like that's going to go well.
Yeah, that seems very, oh, yeah, par for the course in these patriarchal society, right? I wonder what her story is, this Stephanie girl, because her picture's not on it. So she obviously didn't sign off on being used. So we're not going to talk to her probably, right?
Or they'll, like, blur her out and change her voice, which they've been known to do in situations like
this. That's true. Yeah, like on the TV, they had, like, the video conversation and, yeah, they've done that before. Yeah. I wonder if her reluctance had to do with, you know, the family, because if I with my, that was gonna be my in-laws. If I knew that's the stock you were coming from, honey, I don't care how good you are in bed, no dick is worth that kind of baggage.
mean, well, at the very least, you wouldn't have to worry about the father-in-law. Like, you're never gonna, I mean,
well, sure, yeah, he's but in yeah. prison, but
you've also got the whole rest of the clan where, like,
yeah, yeah. Sure. Like, he's not controlling shit from behind bars like Warren Jeffs is. Come on now.
We don't know. I would hope not, but I mean, would imagine Warren Jeffs can do it. Anybody can.
Yeah, Warren Jeffs does it all the time. So, yeah. Interesting. So now I'm going to go find out more about this ministry, because I've only just gotten to, like, the beginning of it. Oh my so gosh. Now I got to go find it.
You cannot tell me, well, not you, like, collectively you, like, no one can tell me that production did not know that. Like,
no, they did.
No,
and they did it on purpose.
There's no way they didn't know.
Of course they knew. They had to have known.
She came from Tony Alamo Ministries. Like, that's just, like, oh.
And that they were okay putting this on, given
especially
that.
Her comments about, like, it was, like, all rosy and rainbows.
Yeah. Given that comment and given the context, yeah, I'm going to link the Sarcasm article below so you guys can look into it and yourselves if you want to see it. I know I posted it on my Instagram too, but yeah. So that's what you're going to dig into this week, right?
Yes, we're all gonna now go down the rabbit hole on Tony Alamo Ministries.
And God knows where that's gonna lead me on YouTube.
And if you want to watch a really awesome movie about communes and violence, Midsummer is super interesting.
And what platform do we watch that on?
Max. I've been watching
on Max. Yes. Yeah, it's definitely on my list. I'm also watching The Gentlemen on Netflix, which is enjoyable.
Nice.
It's like a little quirky, a little fun, a little Breaking Bad. It's even got what's his name, Gus, in it. So it's like underground drug kingpin, like literally underground. It's kind of, yeah, but it's like English, and it's fun and quirky. I'm enjoying it, but I can see it would not be for everybody. I can see.
Gotcha.
But I would give it a shot. It's compelling. I'm compelled. It's compelling to me. Watch. Anyway, I think that's it for the show this week. Next week we'll be back, but hopefully all three of us. That's it. That's what we got.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging with us.
Thanks. Thanks. Goodbye. Okay,